Mary Conlin, Juan Carlos Davila. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Stay safe.
Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO is looking for a next membership director. KBOO's members are the heart and soul of our community, and we need a dedicated person to honor and foster this relationship. Are you the right person to steward and manage KBOO's membership department, or do you know someone who is? Then go to kboo.fm to learn more about the essential functions of the membership director and the qualifications we are looking for. To apply, please email your resume and cover letter to hiring@kboo.org by Sunday, March 6th at midnight. You can also apply by mailing your resume and cover letter to KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Members make KBOO happen.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, advocates for those on the brink of houselessness fear a wave of evictions is coming in Oregon. Thousands of civilians are dead after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The UN is demanding that Putin withdraw his military forces. And experts press for passing the climate change provisions of the Build Back Better bill. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, March 3rd, 2022. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us. Housing advocates are sounding an alarm. They fear a possible eviction wave. That's because the grace period for back rent is over in Oregon. Street Roots reports that vulnerable communities are expected to be disproportionately impacted. In January, there were more than 800 eviction filings in Oregon courts, more than double the amount of a year ago. The state's protection for renters ended February 28th, and with that, tenants are responsible for back rent. Those who have been granted emergency rental assistance or have an application processing will get an extended grace period. Last week, Democrats introduced a $400 million housing stability bill in Oregon's legislative short session. Oregon state lawmakers in Salem have scheduled a vote today on legislation which would roll back tear gas restrictions. Civil rights groups are criticizing the move. In May, Salem police used tear gas against demonstrators protesting police brutality and the death of George Floyd. State Representative Janelle Bynum, a Portland area Democrat, is trying to ban their use against crowds in one of the most sweeping measures in the country to restrict tear gas and other riot control munitions. A House committee says former President Trump may have committed crimes relating to the January 6th riot at the Capitol. With more in the story, here's KBOO's Josh Salem.
The House panel investigating the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol said yesterday evidence suggests crimes may have been committed by former President Donald Trump and his associates. This is the first time a conclusion this strong has been put forward by the committee. A filing submitted in a U.S. court in the Central District of California discussed the failed effort to overturn the outcome of the 2020 presidential election. It stated Trump and his associates engaged in a criminal conspiracy to prevent Congress from certifying Democrat Joe Biden's victory in the Electoral College. The committee also said Trump and those working with him pressured state officials to overturn the results, potentially violating multiple federal laws to defraud the United States. The consequences of the filing are not clear. Lawmakers do not have the power to bring criminal charges on their own and can only refer to the Justice Department. The Justice Department has also been investigating last year's riot, but has not indicated it is seeking charges against Trump. The committee made the claims in response to a lawsuit by Trump advisor John Eastman, a lawyer consulting about his potentially trying to overturn the election. Eastman is trying to withhold documents from the committee. The filing Wednesday was an effort to knock down Eastman's attorney-client privilege claims. There is potentially a legal exception allowing the disclosure of communications regarding ongoing or future crimes. The filing also provides new details from the committee's interviews with several top Trump aides and members of former Vice President Mike Pence's team. The committee says it has evidence that Trump tried to strong-arm Pence to delay proceedings so there would be additional time to manipulate election results. Eastman had pushed for Pence to intervene in his ceremonial role and halt a certification of the electoral votes, steps Pence had no power to take. Lawmakers and investigators have interviewed hundreds of people, including members of Trump's family and his chief of staff, as well as allies in the seven swing states where the former president tried and failed to prove he won. The panel has also subpoenaed records from top social media platforms. The committee is expected to fully release its findings before the midterm elections. Hearings are planned starting in April. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Experts are pressing for the passage of climate change provisions of the Build Back Better bill. As Suzanne Potter reports, new research from Princeton University finds that parts of BBB would reduce the average household energy cost in the year 2030 by about $300 per year.
Experts say it's more important than ever to tackle climate change and reduce dependence on fossil fuels in light of a new UN report that warns time is running out. This week, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change warned that 3.5 billion people around the world are now highly vulnerable to the megafires, drought, sea level rise, and flooding associated with climate change. Shannon Hike Williams with the National Wildlife Federation says it's a matter of life or death for many species.
An estimated 3-14% of all land species may face a high risk of extinction at 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming, a level increasingly looking like a waypoint to more warming than an endpoint, if robust policies are not enacted immediately.
Opponents complain about Build Back Better's hefty price tag. Conrad Schneider with the Clean Air Task Force says Build Back Better's tax credits for clean energy will cut down on deaths from diseases exacerbated by particulate matter in the air.
These provisions would reduce cumulative premature deaths by 24,000 through 2030 versus current policies.
A study by Project Repeat at the Princeton Zero Lab analyzed the impact of the Build Back Better Act's climate provisions and found that the bill would cut emissions enough to put the U.S. within close reach of President Biden's commitment to cut emissions in half from peak levels by 2030. Study co-author Dr. Jesse Jenkins says Build Back Better would also be a huge boost to the economy.
We found that the investments in the Build Back Better Act would result in approximately 2 million more net jobs in energy supply sectors in 2030 relative to the infrastructure bill alone. And notably, 1 million of those are in manufacturing, primarily in solar and wind-related component manufacturing.
Marcella Mulholland, political director for the polling firm Data for Progress, says Build Back Better has broad bipartisan support.
Nearly all Democrats, so 92%, over two-thirds of independents, 72%, and 46% of Republicans say it is very or somewhat important for Congress to take action on climate change.
For Nevada News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
It's become a popular celebrity-endorsed trend. The dad bod has become fashionable during the pandemic. I talked to a doctor about why it's not such a great trend for men's health.
My name is Dr. Andrea Clemis. I'm chief medical officer at MDVIP.
Okay. And what is MDVIP?
MDVIP is a national network of primary care physicians that focus on personalized medicine. They have the time to really dive deep into wellness, prevention, and early detection, but that time also affords them a better doctor-patient relationship, so you have a better healthcare experience and you're healthier.
Okay. Well, we know lots of things have changed for all of us during the pandemic, including for men, their health habits. And that means that bigger waistlines are becoming the new normal. Tell me about that.
Yeah, you know, you see a lot about the dad bod in the news, Leonardo DiCaprio and Will Ferrell, Vince Vaughn. And, you know, it seems to be accepted. Men and women are okay with it. We did an MDVIP survey, and it showed that about half the men thought it was okay to have a dad bod. But the problem is that weight around the middle, a little bit of fat on the exterior, but there's also fat on the interior that surrounds your internal organs that increases your risk dramatically for heart disease, diabetes, and even certain cancers.
Uh-huh. So what would you tell men in this group that, you know, they need to do to address the problem?
Well, first they need to look in the mirror, right? You can stand on a scale and see your weight and say, well, my weight is fine. But you have to see, do you have that fat around the middle? And then they need to go to their primary care physician, a partner with a physician like an MDVIP physician who can really work with you, talk about diet, exercise, eating habits, and what you can do to get yourself healthier.
Mm-hmm. And another thing you found in a survey is that men are not informed well about common health issues that affect them. What are those health issues that they need to know more about?
Yeah, we found in the MDVIP survey, 94% failed the men's health IQ. And in that, 90% of men did not know that heart disease is the leading cause of death. They thought it was cancer. But yet, 80% didn't know that a colonoscopy could help prevent cancer. We also found that 75% of men didn't know that erectile dysfunction was an early indicator of heart disease. So we need to educate more.
Mm-hmm. What is a dad bod? Can you define that for us?
Yeah. I mean, you can Google it and see Leonardo DiCaprio or Will Ferrell, Jack Black, but it's more of that rim of fat around the middle where, you know, your arms and your legs look pretty good, and it's just a little bit extra fat around the middle.
Okay. So it may not seem like it's that insidious, but yet it can be actually pretty dangerous for the guys out there.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes, very much so, because, you know, you only see a little bit of fat on the outside, but it's what it's doing to your interior and markedly increasing your risk for chronic diseases.
Uh-huh. And it's a remarkable failure rate of 94% of men failing the Men's Health IQ quiz. What are the biggest misconceptions that men have about their health?
Yeah, I think there were, you know, two things that struck me. One was that 84% of men said that they were in excellent health or good health, and that 60% knew their numbers. The problem was they also said that they hadn't had any levels checked in years, like cholesterol or blood sugar for diabetes or blood pressure. So they think they're healthy, but they're not getting those screenings that they need. The other big bucket was under the mental health bucket. We know mental health is so important to overall health, and over half the men said that they've never been screened or even discussed stress, anxiety, or depression with their physician. And then, of course, you add COVID on top of it, which has markedly increased everybody's stress levels. They said that they were embarrassed or just didn't want to go in and talk to a doctor about mental health or sexual health, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. I guess that this is maybe an unfair stereotype of the men avoiding the doctor and us women trying to get the men to go to the doctor. But what are some things that we can do to encourage men to protect themselves, protect their health?
Yeah, it's actually not a stereotype, because the MDVIP survey found that 40% of men said they only go to the doctor if there's something urgent. So I think we need to have a paradigm shift. Men need to think of their bodies kind of like their cars. You know, they take their car in for an oil change, or they rotate the tires. The car is running well, but they want it to stay running well. So they need to do that with their bodies also. They need to understand what their risk is for heart disease or diabetes. They need to find a physician like an MDVIP physician who can partner with them and really help them hit those health goals and let them know that it's not scary. 30% in the survey said that they didn't go to the doctor because they were afraid of what they would hear.
Hmm. What are some of the basic prevention screenings that really should be in that toolkit of protecting men's health?
Yeah, I mean, you need to look for risk for heart disease. So that's looking at your cholesterol levels, your inflammation levels, because that inflammation is the other piece of the puzzle for heart disease, your risk for a heart attack or a stroke. You need to look for blood sugar, see what your diabetes is. So, you know, a blood panel, looking at a lot of these things. You need to be screened for things like depression, anxiety, sleep apnea, hugely underdiagnosed, and especially increased in people who are overweight. Obviously, look at your weight. And you can even, many of our MDVIP physicians will look deep into your weight, looking at your percent body fat, you know, where, how is your fat distributed and what, and how you can work on that to keep yourself healthy.
Mm-hmm. What about testosterone? Is more T better or not?
Well, you would think so, looking at all the advertisements on TV. The MDVIP survey showed that about 50% of men take supplements to boost their testosterone. Yet more than half have never had their levels checked. I had a patient who came in once and said, "No, I'm tired, I have a low libido, I'm not getting the results at the gym, I think I need new testosterone." And I said, "Well, let's check your level with some other things." And his testosterone level was fine. He had diabetes and thyroid disease. Once we controlled those, his symptoms all went away. So it's important, if you think you have symptoms of low testosterone, well, if you have symptoms, you need to find a physician, go to your primary care physician, get your levels checked, and really understand if that's what you need or if it's something else.
So what's your advice to the women trying to get a reluctant partner or husband, father, son, et cetera, to see a doctor? What can we do?
You know, the good news is 80% of the men in the MDVIP survey said that their spouse is very influential on their health. So I think that because they'll motivate them, you know, they need to partner with them. I mean, a spouse can also look for red flags, you know, if there's a suspicious mole on your partner's back, or if they're, you know, not keeping up in a walk like they used to, or having some chest pain, or just gaining those pounds around the middle. Those are all things that they really should tactfully point out, but, you know, maybe work with them to lose that weight or go to the doctor at the same time so that you can both get your screenings done.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else I haven't asked you about that you'd like to add?
No, I think just that, you know, they need to go to mdvip.com/menshealthiq, take the quiz, and learn a little bit more.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Annette.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on a bill in Oregon's legislature that would require a police officer to inform a stopped person of the right to refuse to consent to a search. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio, then at 7, Hard Knock Radio, and at 8, Ear to the Streets of Portland. Tonight's weather, light rain early, remaining cloudy with showers overnight, low around 40. Tomorrow's weather, cloudy early with partial sunshine expected later, high near 50. Today in history, on this date in 1953, the Texas Senate approved admitting women to Texas A&M University. The quote of the day is from Barack Obama. "You know, we're in a sports center. Imagine if you have a team and you don't let half the team play. That's stupid. That makes no sense. And the evidence shows that communities that give their daughters the same opportunities as their sons, they are more peaceful, they are more prosperous, they develop faster, they are more likely to succeed." Much of the international focus is currently on the Ukraine and Russia conflict, but less attention has focused on the missile tests in North Korea in January. So we have some global citizen commentary on this issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertoff. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Thanks, and hello, everybody. North Korea's Kim Jong-un knows how to take advantage of a world in turmoil. North Korea's 7th missile test in January, a record number, almost certainly was timed to events in the United States and South Korea, and maybe in China and Russia, too. The U.S., NATO, and Russia are embroiled in confrontation over Ukraine. South Korea will have a presidential election in March. China is walking a tightrope on Ukraine and is dealing with a resurgence of the pandemic in Hong Kong. All these events preoccupy national leaders who probably have in common the wish that the North Koreans would somehow go away. Close observers of the North Korean tests see a familiar pattern. They test increasingly long-range and powerful missiles, await strong reactions from Washington, Seoul, and Tokyo, and then go into negotiation mode. The latest test on January 29 was an intermediate-range missile, whereas previous ones were shorter range. Upcoming tests might, as in the past, include an ICBM that could, in theory, reach the U.S. All these tests violate U.N. prohibitions, but sanctions have not persuaded North Korea to stop. North Korea has refrained from violating its own moratorium, which Kim Jong-un announced in 2018, on long-range ballistic missile and nuclear tests. But missile production continues. Why is that? One reason is national unity at a time when the economy is a mess, as Kim Jong-un has admitted. As Kim emphasized in his New Year's message, increasing food production is the top priority. A U.S. government estimate is 63% of the North Korean population is food insecure. Missile tests, to the contrary, are a great success and a source of national, or at least the elite's, pride. Under Kim, North Korea has conducted over 130 missile tests and four of the North's total of six nuclear tests. Second, Kim needs to get America's attention, reminding Washington of its military capability. Not, mind you, its intention. It most certainly is not threatening a missile strike anywhere. But it wants the U.S. to pay attention to its needs, both strategic and economic. That means reducing what it perceives to be the ongoing U.S.-South Korean threat and the sanctions. The Trump administration's main failure in talks with North Korea was its refusal to offer incentives to denuclearize. Trump walked away from his summits with Kim with nothing more than photo ops. Biden has proposed talks without preconditions, which is fine, but without incentives as well, he's not going to get anywhere. The standard U.S. policy of demanding denuclearization first and only then talking about ending sanctions has never worked and won't work now. But with so many other domestic and international issues on his plate, Biden has given North Korea very low priority. One option that has always been on the U.S. president's table is to seek China's help. The rationale is simple. China has always fretted about the potential for another war on its doorstep, provoked by North Korea, and China's food and fuel assistance is critical to the North Korean economy. The latest round of North Korean missile tests no doubt is causing concern in Beijing. Trouble is, China is not going to come to Washington's assistance when relations with the U.S. are at such a low point. To the contrary, China has largely ignored United Nations sanctions on fuel and other aid to North Korea because the Kim regime's survival is an important Chinese interest. Right now, Beijing has the best of both Korean worlds, good relations with North and South, and thus little reason to put pressure on the North. This year, China and South Korea are celebrating 30 years of diplomatic relations that have included substantial trade, tourism, and military exchanges. At the most recent get-together of senior diplomats, Chinese and South Korean, in December, the Chinese official affirmed that, quote, China always supports the improvement of South-North relations on the Korean Peninsula and advocates the settlement of the Korean Peninsula issue through dialogue and consultation. That sort of statement suggests that the South Koreans have won qualified support from China for the goal of ending the Korean War in tandem with North Korean reduction of missile tests. U.S. policy should be reducing sanctions in synchrony with a North Korean moratorium on its missile tests. That would mean adopting a step-by-step, action-for-action approach to the nuclear issue, as the U.S., both Koreas, China, Russia, and Japan all agreed back in 2005. And the U.S. should follow South Korea's lead, let's remember it's their country, on trying to finally end the Korean War and build cooperative projects with North Korea. The last thing Joe Biden needs as he deals with Russia is to be blindsided by another North Korean ICBM or nuclear test. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Mel Gertov for The Global Citizen.
Since Russia invaded Ukraine, more than 2,000 civilians have been killed. The United Nations votes to reprimand Russian President Vladimir Putin and demands that he withdraw military forces. Global oil prices surge, and the Fed plans to hike interest rates. With more on these stories, here's today's edition of the Headlines Affecting Our Democracy in 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
That is not a war, it's a genocide and destruction and killing of people, because it is. They realize that they cannot get it easy, that people don't want to be with them, they want to be free.
Indiana Republican Representative Victoria Spartz, the first Ukrainian-born member of Congress, pleaded for a stronger U.S. response to the crisis in Ukraine. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Russian forces have invaded the country's second-largest city and are targeting civilians.
Russian strikes are hitting schools, hospitals, residences. They're destroying critical infrastructure, which supplies millions of people across Ukraine with drinking water, with electricity.
Ukraine's State Emergency Service said Wednesday more than 2,000 civilians have been killed since Russia invaded February 24th. Attacks on civilian areas have increased in the last 48 hours, but experts say the casualty number is unverifiable. The United Nations General Assembly overwhelmingly voted Wednesday to reprimand Russia for invading Ukraine and demanded Moscow stop fighting and withdraw its military forces, an action aimed to diplomatically isolate Russia at the world body. U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas Greenfield.
We stand together in holding Russia accountable for its violations of international law and to address the horrific human rights and humanitarian crisis unfolding before our eyes.
More than 874,000 Ukrainian refugees have arrived in neighboring countries since Russia launched its invasion, according to the UN Refugee Agency. Global oil prices are surging, with markets bracing for disruptions to crude supplies from Russia. The global benchmark topped $113 a barrel Wednesday, just days after breaching the triple-digit mark for the first time in 7 years. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell testified before the House Financial Services Committee. He said, despite inflation, he expects to raise interest rates by 0.25% later this month, and noted the effect the Great Resignation is having on wages.
An unprecedented number of workers are quitting to take new jobs, and wages are rising at their fastest pace in many years.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi held an enrollment ceremony Thursday for legislation which would amend federal law to end forced arbitration in sexual assault and harassment claims.
This landmark legislation will put an end to that shameful practice by voiding agreements that currently silence more than 60 million workers.
The bill next heads to President Biden's desk. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Russia-Ukraine war is putting pressure on governments for more wind and solar. Sanctions against Russia for the Ukraine invasion have not targeted the oil trade, but have sent the worldwide price of oil soaring to more than $100 a barrel. As Ross Brown reports, now some American politicians are calling on the Biden administration to take more action.
In recent years, New Mexico has tried to move away from its historical role as an oil and gas hub, and the crisis in Ukraine could have major implications. Russia's invasion of its neighboring country has caused oil prices to surge. Riley White is an associate professor of finance at the University of New Mexico. He says depending on the length of the conflict, it could also put pressure on U.S. producers to ramp up crude oil production.
The United States right now is the largest oil producer. We have about 20% or so of the world's production. Russia is third. They have about 11%. And New Mexico is the third biggest oil producing state.
Texas produces the most oil in the U.S., followed by North Dakota. The U.S. economy has weakened because of the 2-year pandemic, with Americans already paying more for electricity, heating, and gasoline than they were last year. White says this is the most expensive we've seen oil prices since 2014, and it's impossible to know if its effects on consumers will be short-term or long-term.
But the hard part is that we respond because we're humans to these immediate price shocks, as opposed to sort of long-term overarching stories. And they're not two separate issues. We have to consider both the short term and long term.
There's also speculation that Russia's invasion of Ukraine will put pressure on governments to build more wind and solar power to reduce dependence on imported fossil fuels. But as White notes, that can't happen overnight.
It's likely this will speed it up, but at the same time, we don't have the infrastructure to switch to a completely electric tomorrow. Infrastructure takes a very long time to build out, and technological progress takes a long time to see fulfilled.
White says New Mexico and other states also could be affected by the supply of palladium from Russia, used in catalytic converters, jewelry, and other items. Russia is the world's largest producer of the chemical element, also found in South Africa and Canada. This is Roz Brown, New Mexico News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, March 3rd, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Roz Brown, and Suzanne Potter. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In-Depth next.
KBOO News In-Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
The Transforming Justice Coalition is back in Salem with unfinished business from the 2021 Oregon legislative session. This year, Senate Bill 1510 proposes to reduce unnecessary police stops, improve success for people on probation and parole, and address racial disparities in the criminal legal system. With me is Julianne Jackson and Talia Gadd with Partnership for Safety and Justice. So let's first talk about how this bill will reduce unnecessary police stops.